gone. Oh.
That was an oldie but goodie. Yeah, we like those oldies. Us old people, we like those oldies and goodies, yeah. It's probably all we'd sing practically if it was up to us. Therefore, don't leave it up to us. Okay. There's the Bible talk. We were packed out on Tuesday night. That was great. We had a few visitors for our Wednesday Bible talk at Mesa College. There you go. I taught at Mesa College a long time ago. Bible talk. And then, yeah, the volleyball and chicken and all that at the beach. Garrick said, do you guys go swimming? No. He said, why didn't you go swimming? We were just too busy having fun. We just didn't have time to go swimming. Yeah, it was great. Uh-huh. And yes, so I was going to say we're going to be a little light on people this morning because our, you know, people are at the singles thing, but we're not, we're full anyway. But there they are. Remember, we put that little thing up on the announcements every week, and there it is. So they actually went to it, and that's really great. Next year, some of our younger singles are going to go. Yes. I just had to put that in because that's such a great picture. I love it. And that's a great picture, although that's not an actual picture of St. Luke. That was just somebody's. That's an artist's rendering. An artist's opinion. All right. So that's supposed to be Luke. I doubt he looked like that, but that's okay. All right. Plus, he has a Bible in his hand. I mean, he didn't even have the New Testament. Anyway, whatever. Okay, so we're doing a series of lessons on Luke. We're about halfway through, maybe just over half. And we're going through Luke a little bit thematically, not necessarily chapter one, then chapter two. We did the first few chapters consecutively, so now we're doing themes. All right, so we did a theme of Luke and discipleship. We did a theme of Luke and women. And today we're going to do a theme of Luke Jesus and the poor, Luke and women. Jesus and women, not Luke and women. Jesus and women, Jesus and the poor. So let's remind ourselves what we learned about last week. We discovered that, Watch this. No? Oh. Contacting your server for information. What's that about? Sorry about that, folks. Especially if you're online or listening to the recording. Sorry about that. All right, so let's do it again. Somebody want to, some smart person want to figure that while I'm preaching? Some smart person? Oh, it just went forward.
Really? Oh, nice. I just touched
it. Yeah, as soon as you sat down again. Do your mumbo jumbo, please. Thank you. So, last week we looked at how specifically the Gospel of Luke pays special attention to Jesus' interaction with women. All right. So, we saw that women have a particularly prominent role in the birth of Jesus, in the death of Jesus, and in the resurrection of Jesus. That tells us something. And we saw the widow at Nain. Her only son had died. And she was a widow, alone, without protection, no opportunity for remarriage, no opportunity for a career, nearly cut off from her family. Then her only son died. And Jesus looked at her. He saw her. And his heart went out to her. Of course. And he raised her son from the dead. Then we saw Jesus interacting with Simon, the Pharisee, and with the, in quotes, sinful woman. Simon showed disdain for this woman, failing to notice that maybe her being a sinful person might have be the responsibility of men, possibly. And he wouldn't even look at her. And Jesus said to him, Simon, look at that woman. And we were challenged to think about who do we need to look in the eye and recognize as being a human being. Then we had the story of the poor widow, which was the favorite of my three stories personally. Jesus said, truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more in than all the others. All these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. But actually, this story connects perfectly with Jesus and women, and also Jesus and the poor. Actually, we could call this lesson Jesus and the Poor, or we could more suggestively call it Jesus and the Rich. Okay, we could call it that. You think about that. So let's do that. Let's segue into talking about that. So we're going to go to the Sermon on the Flat Place. Right? It's the Sermon on the Flat Place. Let's go to Luke 6. Luke 6. Now, we're going to be talking about not just money, but we're going to talk about wealth and even perhaps in some ways possibly opportunity, privileged opportunity. And, you know, this is a, you know, it's kind of a touchy subject. There's, in my opinion, there's three subjects that you're not socially, you're not supposed to bring up with, especially amongst guys. Maybe women do it, but guys, not amongst guys. And that is about your marriage, about your parenting, and about your money. Those three things, you're not supposed to kind of, you're supposed to, oh, just hands off. Okay, so I'm going to touch that, one of those touchy things a little bit. Money, not just money, but primarily not even talking about money. We're talking about wealth of opportunities and things like that. Now, let's look at a little bit of the, sort of the background. We looked at the story of the rich young ruler when we were doing Matthew, and we noticed that the Jewish perception is rich people were favored by God. That was why they're rich. So their assumption would be, if you're rich, that probably means you're the good guy. And if you're poor, it's probably something about you, and you're sort of the bad guy. So understand, because remember, one of the themes of Luke is a turnaround, a turnaround story, all right? The ones who are on the top will be on the bottom, and the ones who are on the bottom will be on the top. And in a Jewish cultural setting, this distinction, this sharp, almost moral distinction between the wealthy and the poor would be a little bit different than our American perspective. Because honestly, although on the one hand we might sort of envy the wealthy, we also think they're probably a bunch of greedy people. You know what I'm saying? So we don't necessarily think, we Americans don't necessarily think rich people are therefore somehow more favored by God or even possibly better people. I don't think we think that way, but for the sake of this parable and these stories today, understand that would have been the Jewish perspective. All right, so there you go. So Luke 6, let's read 17 through 20 and then 24 and 25. Here we go. He went down with them and stood on a level place, right? This is not the Sermon on the Mount. This is the sermon on the flat place. Okay? And a large crowd of his disciples was there, and a great number of people from all over Judea, from Jerusalem, from the coastal region around Tyre and Sidon, who had come to hear him to be healed of their diseases. Those troubled by impure spirits were cured. And the people all tried to touch him because power was coming from him and healing them all. All right? So, is this the same sermon as the Sermon on the Mount? Because if you look, the content is really similar. There's two possible views on this. It doesn't matter to me which your view is. Yes?
Well, I think that symbolically it's very different because if it's on a level place, then, I mean, that's Jesus speaking from sort of the same level as the people, right?
All right, it's possible, although if you're in Indiana, the only place you could ever preach is on a flat place. You couldn't even preach on a mountain. But it's possible. All right, actually, by the way, the most common scholarly opinion is Jesus is on the side of a mountain speaking down to people on a flat place below. That's the most common. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Okay, we'll settle that later, okay? All right, so is this the same sermon or is this a similar sermon? I don't know. It doesn't matter too much this morning. But actually, what Jesus says about the poor is significantly different. So let's read what Jesus says about the poor. It might be the same sermon. It might not be. We'll hold off our opinion on that. And we can have a fun discussion about that later. Let's read verse 24 and 25. But woe... I'm sorry, I didn't finish. Verse 20. All right. Blessed are you... I'm sorry. Looking at his disciples, he said, all right, blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Skipping down to verse 24. But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Woe to those who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. Okay, so there's two rather obvious differences between the version of this sermon, whether it's the same one and it's just a slightly different version of it, or whether two separate sermons. We don't worry about that right now, but there's two significant differences. First of all, Matthew says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Okay? And here it just says, blessed are the poor, full stop. All right, blessed are the poor in spirit. That's easier for us to kind of see from a sort of Christian perspective. Yeah? Right? Blessed are those who understand that before God, they're not really all that awesome on their own. They need God. But here he says, blessed are the poor. Just blessed are the poor. Okay? And then, oh, he says, for yours is the kingdom of God. Then he goes down to verse 24, but woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Now, how many of you would say on this world scale are rich? Yeah, I'd say probably most of us pretty much. All right. Do you have access to internet?
Yeah.
All right. Do you have like a cell phone?
Yeah.
All right. Do you have like food every day? Like almost like it's almost like more food than you could ever eat pretty much available. All right. Yeah. So probably, you know, we're not going to worry about whether you're rich or poor today, but I just to make it just a broad point. Okay. So those two distinctions. So which group are you in, the poor or the rich? Now, if it's blessed are the poor in spirit, all right, I think that's a little bit less maybe in your face, all right? But if it's blessed are the poor and woe to those who are rich, that's a little bit more of an edge, at least to me anyway. Blessed are the poor. Now, I believe that it's very likely these two are not as distinct as they might seem, okay? Because I do think that the idea of being rich and poor in the New Testament is not the same as having a lot of money and not having a lot of money, okay? So in the New Testament context, the poor are the marginalized in general, all right? The poor then would be poor in things, but also poor in social capital, perhaps. It would include, maybe in our context, the very old, maybe the single moms, the ones who grew up in broken homes, who didn't really have access to maybe going to college or these kinds of things. Those who were marginalized. Joel Green, oh, I think I've got a quote for this one. I really like what Joel Green said. Joel Green, this is a commentary on Luke I read. Said the rich in the New Testament context could be defined this way. Those with the significant resources at their disposal, yet who fail to consider and care for the plight of others. Okay? All right? Think about that. That's one way of thinking about it. So the poor are the ones who, whether they do or do not have significant resources, nevertheless, who do consider and care for the plight of others, okay? But on the other hand, I believe Jesus, he flat out gives preference for the poor. He just flat out does. Just when in doubt. All right? Kind of like a little bit of, what do you call it? When they help people of color get to college. Affirmative action. Kind of like an affirmative action for the poor, if you will. As I look at Jesus, I see him doing something along those lines. All right, so if we are wealthy on the world scale, then maybe we're going to be a little bit challenged, perhaps, by Jesus as we look at these passages. But really, honestly, speaking as an American, somebody's given this illustration. Louis XIV, all right, fantastically, the Sun King in France, perhaps the most wealthy man in the world at that time. We have more choices for meat than he did. I mean, if you go to the supermarket, how many cereal items, how many options for cereal do you have? Just go count. All right. Ask, they're not here today. Ask Juan and Michael. Hundreds! Certainly over 100. We have more choices for fruit. Are you kidding? Louis XIV, he probably had maybe 3 or 4 choices. All right? And we have access to free or nearly free education through 16th grade here in America. All right? 16th grade. Through college. We have either free or nearly free access to education through 16th grade. That's what we have in America. So I'd say that we have significant resources. That's what I'm saying. So, we have a lot. So Jesus is trying to get our attention this morning, I think, to how we deal with the poor, those who don't have what we have. So Jesus' message is, if you seek your comfort principally for yourself in the here and now, because he says this, he says, woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Woe to those who are rich, all right, who do not consider and care for the plight of the others, okay? Those of you who are rich, you have already received your comfort. So Jesus' message is, if you seek your comfort principally for yourself in the here and now, you will not receive comfort in the final kingdom of God. As he says, you've already received your comfort. All right, so let's just park there for a little while. Just think about it. Jesus said, woe to those who are rich, and blessed are those who are poor. Right? So how does that make you feel? What does that make you think? By the way, we're going to do an actual little discussion thing in a few minutes where you get to talk amongst each other. But that was a rhetorical question. Now let's go to the story of the rich fool. Okay, the rich fool. Actually, we're going to read Luke 12:13-15 because Luke 12:13-15 is the stage that's set for Jesus to tell this parable. We're going to go back to Luke 12:13-15. All right. As I'm saying these things, I'm feeling personally a little bit like, wow, I don't know how I'm doing on this stuff. All right. Someone in the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Jesus replied, man, who appointed me judge or arbiter between you? Then he said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Now, it's fairly likely in this case that we have two brothers. One is the older and one's the younger, sort of obviously. And probably it's the younger one who's coming to Jesus, because generally in their culture, the first brother got all the stuff. All right? And not all of it, but more of it. And probably this younger son is getting basically cheated by his older brother. So I'm going to assume that justice lay with this guy. In other words, this guy is probably right. He probably wouldn't have had the boldness to walk up to Jesus if it wasn't like, this is so obvious that I'm right. So all I have to do is present it to Jesus, and he'll say, oh, you're right, and that person's wrong. So he comes up to Jesus, Jesus, tell my brother to be fair with me. But Jesus refuses to get caught up into the controversy, even though it would appear, at least I believe, very likely, that justice lay on the side of the complainer to Jesus. Why? All right, it might be a bit of speculation on my part, but I think here's why. Because the man's greed was a much bigger issue than the justice issue going on. Okay, it's probably true. It's probably true. You're right and your brother's wrong. But you're so greedy, I'm not even going to help you out. Okay? So Jesus goes for the heart issue rather than the legal issue. Says, if you're a greedy person, why would I want to make you get more money? Because what are you going to do with that money? All right? You're not going to help anybody. I may not be right in this, but I think I probably am on this understanding of this situation. So here's the question that this raises for me. All right, are you more concerned with the heart issue or the legal issue? Are you more interested in whether you're right or wrong, or whether or not the heart is being protected? All right, so let's say somebody lashed out at you this week. Maybe that happened. All right? And you're really can't believe that person lashed out at me. But maybe they're having a really, really hard day. Maybe something really bad happened to them. So they lashed out at you. All right? And hey, I'm human too. Somebody lashes out at me, I get mad. Okay? But blessed are the poor. All right? And so I'd say we need to consider what's important. And so do I, by the way. So do I. So in our dealings with one another, let's follow this example. Let's be more concerned about the issues of the heart than the legal issues. And by the way, once you take care of compassion and the issues of the heart, then probably you could talk about the thing that was done wrong. Because it's not like that's bad to bring up. I don't think it was wrong for this guy to mention that he was being treated unfairly by his brother. But Jesus saw his heart, saw his greed, and says, no, mm-mm. And he says this, watch out for all kinds of greed. Okay, watch out for all kinds of greed. Did you know that there are many different kinds of greed? There's all kinds of greed. Okay? There's like desire for more toys, right? More things. More, the best food. I gotta have the best food. I gotta go to that restaurant. Why would I go to that restaurant? That restaurant, that's, you know. I'm go to that restaurant. Desire to get ahead at work at the expense of others, not caring about its effect on others. Lack of generosity. There are so many different kinds of greed. You could probably spend 3 hours just making a list of all the different kinds of greed. So Jesus doesn't just say, watch out for greed. He says, watch out for all kinds of greed. Lack of generosity to those who are in need financially. Fixation on financial matters, such as retirement, financial security. That's greed. Envy of those who have more than we have. That's greed. There's all kinds of greed. So in the biblical context, the word greed, I would propose, includes a desire for improved social standing, self-focused desire to be in the best circles, to be respected, etc. Many things would be included in greed. But Jesus says this, going back to the passage. All right, I got to re-find where I was. Yes. Man who appointed me judge or arbiter between you, then he said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Here we go. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. All right? Do you believe that?
Yes.
Do you believe that life does not consist of an abundance of possessions? Okay. Then why are we so concerned about possessions if we really believe that? You know, they've done polls. I think I might have mentioned this in an earlier sermon. They've done a number of polls and the happiness level. And there are two countries that seem to always come up, and they're two radically different countries. They're Denmark and Cameroon. Right? And in Denmark, social scientists say the reason people are relatively happy is because they don't expect much. They have low expectations.
In Denmark, they got a, you know, certain salary, a modest salary, and an opportunity to have a nice vacation, and that's good enough for them. They're not wanting to always have bigger houses and fancy. That's just the way the Danish people are. They're just content with less stuff. That's why they're happy. The other country, I've been there a couple of times. I've gone to Cameroon. Every time I'm in Cameroon, I go, these people, they're just happy. And I'm telling you, Cameroon, I don't know, I haven't looked up the world rankings, but they're definitely in the bottom quarter for money. I'll tell you that right now. And it just seems like, in general, with some exceptions, I've been in Liberia, very poor country, not a happy country, but generally, the poorer countries seem to be the happier countries. Of course, Denmark's not a poor country. There's no, put it this way, the correlation between money and happiness, it's who knows? It might be a reverse correlation. I don't even know. But Jesus said, life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And you're an American. So I ask you again, do you really believe that? By the way, that's our memory verse for the week. In fact, it's just a half a verse. You don't even have to memorize the whole verse. Just half a verse. Just half a verse. Life does not consist in abundance of possessions. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to do about a 3 or 4 minute discussion with one or two neighbors. The discussion is, what does life consist of? Okay? If life doesn't consist in the abundance of one's possessions, the question is, okay then, well, what does it consist of? So let's do a 3 or 4 minute discussion with our neighbor.
For those listening to the recording, I'm talking to my friend Chris. We're being recorded.
We're being recorded.
What does life consist of?
Life consists of a series of adventures that we go through.
Okay.
It's a journey, not a destination.
Okay, good.
There was a man named Malcolm Forbes. He wrote Fortune Magazine.
Yeah.
Forbes Magazine, excuse me. And he had a euphemism that he who dies with the most toys wins. To that, I object.
Absolutely.
He who dies with the most toys has the highest overhead. But that's got nothing to do with anything. I've never seen a U-Haul fall in a hearse.
Yeah.
So, I believe that the inside of a person's character is developed by what he sees in the blessings that he's received. Basically, mm-hmm. on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I'm 75 years old. I've come from wealth. I don't think people understand that wealthy people are primarily not, as you mentioned, not as happy as those who haven't achieved maybe monetary possessions that they have to worry about. So they're, like you said, in Africa and various countries that I've lived in Southeast Asia, the people are happy because they're blessed. They work for basically food and subsistence.
They have family, though.
They have family. But that's, I think, in the human genome, I think that's the strongest point of the human relationship to other humans.
Yeah. And
when we left the stage of hunter-gatherers, they learned to grow grain.
Yeah.
It was almost like God had spiritually given them a place where now communities start.
Yeah.
Families gather.
Yeah.
And in this, we were veiled to look at our spiritual relationship to what we had based on what we didn't have.
Right.
And when you don't have anything, you need to be in Liberia, in Cameroon, in the Congo, where my great-great-grandfather spent a lot of time. They didn't have anything. But as they looked at the world outside, until basically the 20th century, okay, when a great example,
Chris, I'm going to have to cut you off in about 30 seconds. I got to go out there, but finish your thought. Finish your thought.
When people look at, I think the human genome today in the 21st century is wrapped up in I want this, I need it. Exactly. Myself. It's all about me.
Exactly.
It's all about me.
It's corrosive.
It is,
yeah. Sorry about that. Oh, yeah. Okay, Chris had just gotten started when our 3 or 4 minutes ended up. Because he's been alive longer than most. In fact, longer than all of us. And Chris had some great wisdom on that. But hopefully we came up with some good thoughts. But the thing is, even greedy people know that life doesn't consist in the things that they have. But they don't live that way. And the question is, do we live that way? That's because those greedy people out there, whoever they are, they don't really matter this morning. What matters is your heart this morning.
Okay, so, by the way, this isn't in the parable. This is just the setup for the parable, all right?
So we're going to skip down. All right, to the actual parable in verse 16. And by the way, Jan got me a giant print Bible. Right. Yes, I'm using it for the first time. My left eye doesn't really work very well at all. I can't really read with it, so I really need that, okay? All right, 16 through 23. And he told them this parable. Why did he tell them this parable? Because this guy, who was probably right, said, Jesus, make my brother give me my stuff. Right?
Yeah.
And Jesus says, life doesn't consist of abundance of possessions. In fact, here we go. And he told them this parable, the ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and I'll build bigger barns. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool! This very night, your life will be demanded from you. Then what will you have prepared for yourself? Or as Chris said, there's no U-Haul driving behind the hearse at a funeral, right?
Oh.
No U-Hauls. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves and is not rich towards God. That's the idea. Being rich toward God. But we learned in Matthew 25 what it means to be rich toward God, did we not? That wasn't too long ago. That was maybe last March we had that. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Matthew 25. He said, blessed are those who gave, all right. I'll get it right. Thank you, Matt, for doing that. Thank you. I was going to paraphrase, but I won't get close enough. The sheep are the ones who did the following here. All right, then the king will say to those in the right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. So, that's how they were rich toward God. The way to be rich toward God, at least that's not the only answer, but it's a major part of the answer. The way to be rich toward God is to do these things. But also to seek the kingdom first in other ways. There's many other ways to seek the kingdom first.
That's for sure. But this morning we're mainly talking about stuff. That's the kind of the main thing we're talking about. Giving to the poor and the needy. Now, if you look at this story, this seems to be common sense. All right. Have anybody here ever seen a grain silo? Yeah, they're all over the place. And why do you build grain silos? The reason you build grain silos is because you want to hold back the grain until there's not much available. Supply and demand, and that's when you sell it. And essentially, that's all this guy is doing. I mean, it's this terrible, greedy person. All he's doing is common sense. Common sense. If you have a large crop, if you dump it all in the market, the prices will plummet. You'll get half the money. Common sense. So what's so bad about what this person did? The answer is, well, technically, nothing. Ah, the problem was he wasn't rich toward God. And notice as you read this little parable. I have no place. This is what I'll do. I will tear down. I will store. I'll say to myself, I, me, my. All right. So that's the problem. The problem is not having a savings account. The problem is not preparing a 27-year-old to buy a house someday. That's not the problem. All right? In fact, I agree with this guy. I mean, on a technical basis, I agree with this guy. But the problem was he didn't have the poor in mind. All he had in mind was himself. So what he could have done is, I'm going to store this, and so that in times of shortage, to the really, really destitute, I'll give them some. But to the people who have money, I'll also make more profit. He could have done both. Bottom line is he could have done both. If he stored his grain to those with that money, he could have sold it for twice the price and then used the additional money to give the rest of the grain away to those who are poor and in need. Okay, but here's my question. What about you? Or what about me? You know, what about me? Am I building bigger barns? And again, the problem was not building a bigger barn. I'm almost sure of that. So kingdom ethics is really the opposite of the world's view of how to do such things. It is the upside down kingdom of God. So this man, he failed to account for God in his plans. That's the problem. His plans didn't take God into account. So he's planning his career, his college degree, and he's thinking money. He's thinking opportunity. All right? And if your plan for a career includes opportunity and money as a significant additional thing, don't go away feeling guilty or attacked. Not at all. Not at all. But the question is, are you rich toward God? Is it about that? Are you choosing a career which could both kind of give you a secure future, but allow you to serve people? Might be better. So just playing the markets just to up wealth, you know, just to build up your portfolio. Maybe not a great idea. Let's actually go to another passage, Deuteronomy 8, 10 through 14. Just very briefly, Deuteronomy. Oh, I love it. This Bible has so many pages. So many pages, and it's such big letters. Deuteronomy 8. This is God speaking to his people through Moses. It says, Deuteronomy 8, verse 10. We're all there? When you've eaten and are satisfied, those of us who came to the pancake breakfast yesterday, we've definitely eaten and been satisfied. Yeah. I didn't even want dinner until like 5 o'clock. Thank you for cooking the bacon there, Andres. Praise the Lord your God for the good land he's given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I'm giving you today. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud. You will forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And then later on, in verse 17 and 18, it says, it's the Lord who gave you the ability to even produce wealth. So I think there's two points about this man. All right? 2 points about this man. Number one, he failed to take into account God and his plans, and that's what James chapter 4 is all about, if you read that later. He didn't include God in his plans. Number one. Number two, he failed to take account for the poor. He didn't plan his life around, at least in some ways, helping the needy and the poor. Whatever that would be. Okay? And there's all different kinds of poor people, because poverty of opportunity rather than poverty of money is something to think about. Maybe you could have used the surplus to help the poor, keeping the rest back, still get a nice profit from his labor. What he was doing is he's putting himself in a greater position of power. So I have more and more stuff, and as I get more and more stuff, my neighbors have less and less stuff, and then I'll kind of have leverage. So I'll be able to buy even more land and build even bigger barns. Well, what is enough? How much is enough? Jacking up the prices is not a Christian thing to do. Supply and demand and working with that, okay, I'm not going to attack that, all right? I'm not attacking capitalism per se. That's not what I'm doing here. I don't think Jesus would do that. But the question is, what are you doing with your surplus? Making great plans to use your surplus to your own advantage, or making great plans to use it to serve the kingdom, to help build up the kingdom, to help take care of the poor and the needy? So, at the end of this parable, Jesus says to the man, this very night, your life will be demanded of you. And he says, that is how God will treat whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God. All right? So, look at your life this week, this month, this year. Have you been rich toward God? And even for us as Americans, we somehow think that if we, for example, outsourced jobs, you know, make America wealthy again or something like that. I don't know. Outsourced jobs. Oh, boy. In other words, a rich American loses a job and three poor people in a foreign country get a job. Oh, how terrible is that? I mean, I don't know how terrible that is. I probably just got a little bit political on you, and I probably shouldn't even have done that. But, you know, I think God does not appreciate massive differences in wealth without taking into account the needy. And so that's something for us to think about. All right, so look at your life this week, this month, this year. Have you been rich towards God, and have you been rich towards those in need? All right, now, I've got two more stories. I just ran out of time. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty much running out of time here, because what I wanted to do is I wanted to talk about Luke 14:7-13, where he says, if you have a dinner, don't invite the rich, invite the poor. Does that mean I can't let anybody who's rich come to my dinner? No, that's not what he's talking about. But he's saying, think about that. Think about who you're hanging out with. Are you willing to associate with those who are not as advantaged as you? And then there's the story of the rich man and Lazarus. Now, I cannot skip this story, but I'm going to. I'm just going to have to do it next Sunday because I'm going to run out of time. But this is the ultimate reversal of fortune story in the entire New Testament, I would argue. All right? And it's not a subtle message, but I think I've gone for more than 35 minutes, so I'm going to end my sermon here. So let me get to my summary then. All right? Let us honor God with our money, and let us care for the poor. Let's remember the word spoken to the rich fool. This very night your life will be demanded of you. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves It is not rich towards God. So this sermon this morning was a little bit uncomfortable for me personally even to give it, honestly. I felt uncomfortable even giving it. And maybe for you sitting in the seat there, and if I offended you, I apologize. Maybe. Or maybe not. Depends. All right? But let's consider the poor, and let's observe how Jesus dealt with the poor and the needy in the book of Luke. And now we're going to have a song before the Lord's Supper. And Manny is going to do the Lord's Supper.
Love.
Yes.
If it were not for his love, then we wouldn't have a Savior. We wouldn't have died.